You mentioned before the break that just about every parent out there has probably had their kid enrolled in, or their child enrolled in some sport at some point. They probably had to pay registration fees, facility fees, uniform fees, transportation fees, all that good stuff. You know, quite often it's a lot of money at the end of the day that ends up getting passed over to the club, usually to a club treasurer or a club president. Have you ever wondered how much of that money, well, gets used for things that you don't think it's going to be used for? Have you ever wondered how much fraud and theft goes on? I mean, I understand. We like to take people at their word. We like to see the best in people, especially when we're talking about volunteer positions. Jamie Strachan is a senior reporter with CBC Sports, and he's done a terrific investigation on the amount of fraud and theft being committed against youth sports leagues and associations throughout Canada. Jamie, thanks so much for joining Stephen and myself. I mean, look, we've all wondered this, right? As we've kind of cut our check handed the money over. I want to ask you, what were your expectations going into this investigation? And when you started to deal with specific cases, such as the one in Newmarket, for example, how much of a shock was that to you?
I think we were surprised at the kind of the amount of money. We just looked at a 10-year slice of time. I was surprised. You know, I'm one of those parents, you know, I don't even want to add up how much money I spend on my kids' sports, over the course of a year. But it's a lot when you look back. And we were definitely, you know, surprised at kind of the scope of the issue. And I would qualify. Most people involved in kids sports volunteering their time, you know, are good people. But I think the nature of the amount of money that's involved, there's a lot of cash on hand. You know, we realized that there was kind of a lot of, you know, opportunity for people who were so inclined to do so, you know, to take money. But we were definitely surprised at the amount of money. And obviously what brought us to this story was, you know, that case, in Newmarket involving the OMHA, the Ontario Minor Hockey Association, where, you know, more than $2 million was taken. I mean, that's not, you know, stealing some money, you know, skimming some money from the snack bar or, you know, invoicing for some uniforms. That was a tremendous amount of money. And in that case, you know, it involved an organization where, you know, it's run by paid professionals. It's not, you know, parents. So that kind of brought us to the story. And once we kind of, you know, looked, you know, started examining the scope of the problem, and, you know, these are just cases that have been kind of criminally charged, I think the story kind of goes a lot deeper than that. We were definitely surprised and kind of, you know, a little bit disheartened at what we found.
Hey, Jamie, I'm on the board of a couple of not-for-profits, you know, that are essentially volunteer run, and I know, like, we spent a lot of time, both those organizations spent a lot of time talking about governance, which is, you know, not the most exciting topic in the world, but there's a reason, right? Because we're accountable to a variety of different people. Our books have to be in order. There are checks in terms of where the money goes, how it's spent, what our financial status is. When I read the story, it seems that any kind of notion of institutional governance in these sports organizations is kind of random. Right.
I think you're completely right. We kind of found, like, you know, I think there's two kind of camps within these youth sports organizations. There's ones that have kind of tuned in to the fact that, you know, around registration time, they're handling hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they've put in, you know, what you'd call, you know, professional protocols, like simple things like, you know, two people with signing authority, a number of people, you know, overlooking the books. But I think in a lot of these cases that we found, the narrative was very much the same. You had, you know, one, you know, dad or mom who, you know, their kids played in the organization, you know, Sue from down the street, or, you know, Dave, the guy, you know, who's got two kids playing in the league. There was a lot of, you know, trust in them. They may have had, you know, some financial background, often not. And there was just very little oversight or insight into what was going on with the books. And, you know, these weren't elaborate crimes. These were people basically writing checks to themselves, you know, usually to fuel some kind of, you know, gambling or drug addiction or, you know, to buy luxury items like that. And, you know, it wasn't until usually, you know, the bill for the ICE or the permit wasn't paid that people started to realize, you know, what the issue was. But I think you're right there, you know, Stephen. There's a huge gap between, you know, what you'd think would be, you know, having certain kind of institutional, you know, protocols and governance mechanisms in place for a lot of these, you know, organizations, given the fact that there's so much money on hand. But in a lot of the cases, there simply isn't.
Jamie, are there warning signs? You know, if you are a parent and you've got a daughter or son and, you know, whatever, water polo, hockey, swimming, baseball, whatever. Are there warning signs, things you should look for that, you know, might raise some red flags for you?
You know, I mean, I think there's the obvious things, like if you see someone, you know, living, you know, well above their means. But I, to be honest, I think a lot of these cases, you know, that we found came to light only when kind of, you know, the rubber hit the road. Like you'd show up and you know, the teams would try to go on the ice or something and you'd realize that, you know, that the bill hadn't been paid and the municipality was asking for the money. Or, like, you know, in the case of the OMHA, you know, it was the league's director of finance, you know, she's the one who's pled guilty here and is awaiting sentencing. She alerted officials, she alerted the league's executive that in fact, you know, there was a bill coming due and that there wasn't money in the account, you know, to pay it. So, you know, I mean, there are a lot of these cases we didn't see, you know, people ask questions or realize that there was issues afoot. It was either, you know, they were found out by their own admission or there was some bill that wasn't being paid. And, you know, I would just add, you know, one other thing. A lot of the people that experts that we spoke to on this, you know, I hate using the term, you know, tip of the iceberg, but I think a couple of factors, we just looked at cases that have been like criminally prosecuted. And I think a number of factors don't, you know, lead organizations to try to deal with this internally or kind of sweep it under the rug. And, you know, one, you have the board of directors, you know, the whose job it is to oversee this, you know, by stepping forward and saying this happened, they're admitting some culpability. They didn't watch the books. And also, like I mentioned, usually this is, you know, being done by someone who's, you know, well-liked for the most part. And that's why they have that trust. They have kids in the organization. And there's a real reticence, I think, you know, for people to want to blow up people's lives, you know, over something, you know, that it is serious. But I think a lot of organizations, you know, judging by the number of emails and stories I've gotten since this story was published about 24 hours ago, hearing stories of, you know, different leagues across the GTA and beyond where this has happened, that, you know, where there were no criminal charges. I think it happens, you know, a lot more often than, you know, even what we found.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense, because rather, you know, I'm sure people are just made to go away rather than, you know, calling the cops, right? That I'm sure that happens all the time.
The other thing
that, you know, and as in terms of the kind of the tip of the iceberg stuff here, Jamie, is that it, because, you know, these are reasonably small organizations and, you know, sometimes not small in terms of money, but because it's of the way they operate, that one person, it's reasonably easy for them to cover their tracks too, isn't it? Like, to a point, like I guess that there's a point maybe where, yeah, somebody's coming looking for the money and it's not there. But if you have full control of the books,
you
have signing authority, there's a lot of things you can do.
Yeah, for sure. Most of these cases went on for years. They weren't, you know, things that they weren't like a one-off. I think the people, you know, if you're the treasurer of an organization, you know the ins and outs of that organization, when the money's coming in, when certain things need to be there. I mean, like I said, these were not sophisticated crimes. These were people usually who know how the organization works, who have kind of been left to their, you know, their own devices. And yeah, that's why we found that a lot of these cases, they went on for a long time before they were found out.